The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
We're going to go to the United States to Cal Thomas and Marion McKeown. And Marion McKeown, I don't know if you've been reading the new Michael Wolff book. After last year's brilliant Fire and Fury, he's one called Siege. I'm about a third of the way through it. It's great fun altogether. Have you read much of it?
I'm about the same as you, Matt. You know, it is, and it has to be said, when his first book, Fire and Fury, came out in, was it January 2018?
Yes.
People went absolutely nuts and said, this is nonsense, it's all made up. But he had the two best sources that you could have if you're writing about Donald Trump and that era, which were Steve Bannon and Roger Ailes, the fired Fox News chief who died since. And you know, and everything really that he wrote in Fire and Fury, it certainly resonated with what I saw on the campaign trail, but it also was really confirmed by subsequent books by people like Bob Woodward and all the other books that came out, Omarosa, etc. You know, in painting a White House that was absolutely chaotic and that was run on the basis of fear and chaos. And this is more of it. I mean, some of it is just
jaw-dropping.
It's sort of like a... You kind of think Armando Iannucci could have written it, because it's just, it should be satire, but you know it isn't. I mean, there are so many parts of it. What's interesting me, really, and I was flicking backwards and forwards, is Steve Bannon has said this before, and of course Steve Bannon is, again, a very major source in this,
and you
and really
on the record.
Wonder what his game is.
He's on the record, too, which is very interesting.
He's on the record. Absolutely, as indeed as he was in the last book. And as I say, you wonder what his game is. I mean, he's been, you know, jumping around Europe at the moment trying to gin up his populist movement with pretty little success. He's become a sort of a peripheral crank figure, I would say. But there's also a lot of report that he's going to be back involved in Trump's campaign in 2020. But Steve Bannon is, he's very clever. You might absolutely despise his politics, but he's a smart guy. He describes the Trump business as a money laundering operation.
A criminal enterprise.
And a criminal enterprise, you know. And honestly, I think that there are a lot of people, and there's been a lot of evidence so far. One of the things that happened that was revealed just this week was that Jared Kushner, his family business, of which he is still involved in, which in itself is outrageous for a White House official and senior advisor, just got a $90 million investment from a secret investor. Now, who is that secret? Like, this is the kind of thing that, you know, I hate this thing where you say, oh, if the Democrats did it, but had Barack Obama's, you know, somebody in his family got that kind of, or Hillary Clinton, heaven, you know, there would have been a special counsel appointed immediately. It would have been an absolute scandal. So I think that we've all become somewhat numb to the sort of very baked in the cake corruption that goes on, not just with the Trump family business, but with the Trump administration, and the two are sort of inseparable, and the Kushner family business as well. So far I think this is another great read. It's funny about Mike Pence and you know, saying, why does he, you can imagine Trump saying, why does he look at me like that? You know, that slightly creepy look Mike Pence has of a crucified martyr, you know, this sort of and says his wife Karen gives, Trump says she gives him the creeps. There's an interesting thing. You remember in the last book there was a very strong allusion to Trump having an affair with Nikki Haley. Nikki Haley furiously denied it, and there's no reason not to believe her.
Absolutely.
And what seems to be suggested this time around is that Trump may have been boasting about it. And again, in the same way, he used to boast that Madonna wanted to date him. You know, I mean, you know, what Wolf says is very consistent with what we know about Trump.
Let me
now,
go to Cal.
I'm sure a lot will come out about it and criticise it and probably debunk it, but we'll see.
Cal, Bannon is quoted in the book also saying that, you know, the investigations that are taking part, not the Mueller investigations, but the ones he handed off for financial investigations in New York, will show he's just a crooked business guy, not the billionaire he said he was, just another scumbag. This portrait of Trump is certainly consistent and it's realistic. What do you make of it?
Well, I hate to interrupt your good time with Marion and joshing and laughing and the usual anti-Trump bashing that we have every week on this program, but, you know, nobody has ever said that Donald Trump is a saint or that he is better or worse than any other politician, Matt. All I'm focusing on right now, and I wish we had better choices. I wish we had some moral, upright, once married, church-going, God-fearing, all of the other things that conservatives and evangelicals would like to see in a leader. But that wasn't the choice last time. And I'm looking at the policies. I'm looking at a stock market that's up over 500 points. It's helping a lot of retirees around the country and people who are invested in it right now, up over 500 points in the last 5 days. I'm looking at the basically full unemployment in the United States, 3.6%, according to the latest figures. We haven't had unemployment that low in 50 years, especially for women and Hispanics and African Americans, record or near record lows. I'm looking at the decline in regulations on businesses. I'm looking at tax cuts that have fueled a booming economy, even better than the Reagan economy in the 1980s. And yeah, I wish all of these other things weren't true, and I wish we had better choices, but we didn't in 2016. And I think Trump is doing what he was elected to do, and that's going to count a lot, not these sideshows of Michael Wolff and Steve Bannon and Jared Kushner in next year's election.
But there's a very interesting thing from the book and also other pieces that I've been reading in the last few days, Cal, in relation to the Mueller investigation. And I think this is something that I would have thought that you, as somebody who believes in the rule of law and doing things properly and correctly, will be worried by, that effectively Trump bullied Mueller. Mueller was effectively too much by the book, far too principled an individual, and allowed himself to be railroaded, particularly in the response that Trump gave to the publication of Mueller's report, in which he lied and misrepresented about what Mueller actually said. And Mueller wasn't of the type of character to come back and fight fire with fire.
Matt, we wouldn't have even had Mueller in a special counsel if it hadn't been set up due to this Steele dossier and the FISA warrants and the fake information and incorrect information and lies told to a FISA judge. This is why we have appointed now a prominent attorney from Rhode Island who is appointed by the Attorney General to look into the beginning of all of this. How did this get started? What about Hillary Clinton's role in her campaign in the Steele dossier and the Democratic National Committee? This stuff is being looked into right now and investigated, and this is what the big media in America and the Democratic Party fear the most, that the real truth is going to come out on this. There would never have been a special counsel at all if the truth had been told from the beginning on this situation.
What'd you say to that, Marion? Briefly, we do need to move on.
Okay, very briefly. Cal, this is about the fourth time you've made this point on air, on this show, and this is the fourth time I've said to you that you know this is not true. The reason the investigation started was because George Papadopoulos, Trump foreign policy advisor, got drunk in London and told the Australian High Commission there that they had dirt on Hillary Clinton they'd got from the Russians. Because of the Five Eyes Agreement, the Australian High Commissioner got in touch with the FBI, and that was where it all started. And, you know, I welcome this investigation, even though it's just Barr doing Trump's bidding, because I think this will all come out. And the other thing is the Steele dossier was initially bought and paid for by Marco Rubio's people. Hillary Clinton inherited it after Marco Rubio dropped out of the race. But also, can I just say very quickly, Cal, it really saddens me to hear you say that you're prepared to jettison America's good reputation internationally, all of its rule as an influencer, as a moral guide, for the bottom line, for a couple of hundred points on the stock exchange and a few more dollars in
okay, well, look, Kyle, you'll have to get a chance to respond to that.
The recession will come and all that will be wiped away, but your reputations will be gone with it.
Oh, sure, right. Look, those were the choices, Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. I didn't, I voted for another choice in the Virginia primary, the state of Virginia. I voted for Marco Rubio. Trump was not my first choice or the second choice. But when the choice came down between Donald Trump and his policies and Hillary Clinton and her policies, I held my nose and I voted for Donald Trump. Do I like the moral standing of the man? No. But if I'm given a different choice in 2020, I'll consider a different choice then. But it doesn't look like I'm going to get one.
Okay, but listen, but there's another thing that's interesting. I mean, even this deal that he's trumpeting that he has done with Mexico, the Mexicans are baffled by his announcements. They haven't agreed a deal. This is the way he does this sort of barrack room diplomacy, literally getting up and shouting, "I've done a deal, they're agreeing to it." And everyone goes, "What are you talking about?"
Well, we'll see. We'll see, won't we? We'll see. I mean, he said in another, 45 days, if they haven't stemmed the tide of illegal aliens and the caravans coming from Central America through Mexico into the United States, record numbers of people flooding this country that cannot be sustained, then he will impose those tariffs he's threatened to do. So we'll see in less than 45 days now.
Okay, but that's different from him saying yesterday that he dealt on. And something else, Carl, I want to actually bring up with you. And if the half-brother of Kim Jong-un, Kim Jong-nam, was a CIA informant, as the Wall Street Journal is reporting, given that he was murdered by Kim Jong-un's people, why the hell has Donald Trump sucked up to Kim Jong-un twice and got nothing for it?
It's a great question, Matt. He's not the first person to suck up to Kim Jong-un or the leaders in Iran and get nothing for it. Barack Obama did it on the nuclear deal with Iran. It's been done in the past. Maybe we got a few prisoners back when Jesse Jackson or the former governor of New Mexico went over there. That really meant nothing at all. As you know, because you've been there, the man is totally unreliable. He's a complete dictator. There's no other sourcing than the Wall Street Journal on this story, but it certainly has some credibility. Otherwise, why would a couple of operatives, apparently on the instructions of Kim Jong-un, assassinate this guy with chemicals at the Malaysian airport? So funnier things have happened. Novels have been written about these sorts of things, but I wouldn't doubt it.
There's one other thing I want to bring up. Marion McCone, the New York Times is getting rid of political cartoons. And this is after an allegedly anti-Semitic cartoon featuring Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, as a dog leading around a skull cap wearing Donald Trump. Now, was it actually anti-Semitic? And even if it was, does that justify a major newspaper abandoning political cartoons?
To that matter, I'd say to the first part of your question, it was certainly in poor taste. It wasn't, you know, but
cartoons awful they are. And surely Israel is not beyond criticism.
Absolutely, but to get rid of its cartoons because of this, we were going to do it anyway, is just craven. The New York Times, when it grovels, it really grovels spectacularly. It was the same several years ago where it ran a 3-page self-flagellation over a guy called Jason Bryant, I believe his name was, and completely ignored the terrible work Judy Miller was doing with her lies about Iraq and weapons of mass destruction. This is appalling. I mean, there's no other way, you know. That they can be so easily cowed, especially at a time like now when the media is under such sustained attack, I think it's appalling. I think it's really disappointing, and I think it's craven.
What do you think, Carl? Freedom of the press? Shouldn't the press continue to publish cartoons, even if they offend some people?
No, I agree with Marion. I think that political cartoons have been a staple of American journalism, and not just American journalism, journalism in free states around the world. But I think the New York Times problem with anti-Semitism goes deeper than that, as Brett Stevens, who is Jewish and a columnist for the New York Times, has brilliantly pointed out a few weeks ago. I encourage your listeners to go look it up.
Okay, but if we're fair to say, though, Carl, isn't it, you can express criticism of Israel and be able to do so without being accused of being anti-Semitic?
Yes, of course, but there's a fine line sometimes, Matt, and some people hide behind freedom of the press to justify their anti-Semitism. Again, Brett Stevens' column on this a few weeks ago in the Times excoriated his own employer, which is a very rare thing to do, and it ought to be read by everybody.
That's freedom of the press for you. Carl Thomas and Marion McCone, as ever, thank you for joining us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.